I'll call the meeting of the Energy Finance and Policy Division to order. Quorum is present, and the first order of business would be approval of the minutes from Monday, March 8th. Chair would entertain a motion to that effect.
So moved.
Motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none. All those in favor of the approval of the minutes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. Minutes are approved. Members, we have on the agenda today a couple of bills that I think are mainly just adjustments that are non-controversial. We are removing from the agenda House File 2019, the reconsideration of the Falk bill. And, of course, we have the budget adjustment bill that we will be considering today. So first on the agenda would be House File 3473, Representative Saylor. Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would like to move House File 3473 for your consideration.
And Representative Saylor, does this have to go anywhere else, or
not to my knowledge?
Moved to the general register.
Yeah, it's just a pretty much a little technical thing here.
Would you explain your bill?
Certainly. This is just a small change, which basically allows energy efficiency programs to provide a greater benefit. There's no cost or anything like that. It's just improving the efficiency. The original language followed the language for the city of the first class, and as the Office of Energy Security has been working with the city of Park Rapids, the city determined that the funds can be put to a more efficient use if they allow for some of the projects that have been coming along independently for small commercial establishments as well. And we just wanted to get the language of the bill in line with some of the work that is being done. And another part of it was that as some of the funds are spent on some of the projects included, there wasn't enough left over to make a revolving loan fund that was sufficient to do anything, so they want to put it into the small commercial instead. That's it.
Thank you, Representative Saylor. Discussion to the bill. Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Saylor, would you refresh me? How much funding was in the original amount for this bill?
Representative Saylor.
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, it was
$100,000.
Yeah. Representative Magnus.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Saylor, how much is left?
Representative Saylor.
Mr. Chair and Representative Magnus, it hasn't been decided exactly yet, simply because they needed to have that definition changed for the commercial part. So none of it has actually been spent yet. It's just determining what's the most efficient use of that money, because it's really actually a relatively, you know, small amount, and it would be less efficient trying to put it into a revolving fund.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Magnus.
Well, Representative Saylor, would you entertain a friendly amendment and add Slayton, my hometown, to that? We'll find him. We'll spend him on it.
Representative Saylor.
Mr. Chair.
Apparently not, Representative.
I thought I'd try.
That was Park Rapids, and
it'll work. Is there further discussion to the bill? Seeing none. Representative Saylor renews her motion that House File 3473 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Slayton has been heard from. Representative Johnson, House File 3499.
Mr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I'd like to move House File 3499.
And Representative Johnson, that would be to the General Register?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Please tell us about your bill.
All right. House File 3499 is also essentially a technical bill, and what it does, it amends current language, which gives authority to the cities of St. Paul and Minneapolis to establish an energy conservation program and provide loans to property owners. And currently, the Twin Cities are competing for federal funds for energy efficiency and conservation. What this amended language will do is include commercial and industrial properties into the parameters of the energy conservation program, and for the sake of competitive federal grants and also just energy conservation generally. And with me just to say a few words is Kathy Pulaski from the City of Minneapolis to make a couple of comments.
Ms. Pulaski, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Chairman Hulte, members of the committee, I'm Kathy Pulaski, Director of Economic Development for the City of Minneapolis. Thank you for hearing this bill. I've been asked to keep it brief. I will. The Stimulus Act presented new opportunities to help residents, businesses, and government reduce their energy consumption in buildings. And because of these opportunities and the increased awareness by the public about the benefits of energy conservation, the cities of St. Paul and Minneapolis have joined forces to find ways to help more people take those energy conservation actions. We've formed a coalition that includes government, the utilities, business, labor, workforce, and our neighborhood groups. And we realize that we need all of these groups working together if we're going to realize our full potential for the triple win, which is to reduce CO2 emissions, reduce costs for residents and businesses, and create jobs in the clean energy economy. We also know that to reach our full potential of this triple win, we have to make these energy conservation moves in all kinds of buildings, so homes and office buildings and commercial and industrial buildings. As we looked at our toolbox and the new funding opportunities presented under the Stimulus Act, we recognized the need to expand our financing tools. The request before you today would expand our existing revenue bonding authority to allow the cities to finance the conservation efforts of businesses as well as residents. When this bill becomes law, we'll be in a position to fully use our federal stimulus dollars that may come our way and to leverage utility rebates and programs that are already in existence and as well as private investment. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Representative Beard.
Not necessarily a question, just a comment to the bill, Mr. Chair. I'm just the first thing that jumped out at me when I read this was there is my theological statement again, my doctrinal statement, Representative Johnson. And but then as I look a little further, I see that these findings are actually 29 years old. Apparently, this is from laws 1981. And back then, we were also still having a panic attack over traditional serious energy shortages and everything that were impending. That was 29 years ago, folks. And we authorized the City of Minneapolis and St. Paul to help citizens save energy like they couldn't have thought it up on their own, I guess. So here we are 29 years later expanding the program. Apparently, you think the findings are still necessary, that we have impending serious shortages of energy resources and so on and so forth. Just noticing that there is nothing new under the sun, and we're going around the block on this again. I suppose it's no great harm will be done by expanding it to commercial and industrial sectors. I just thought I'd point out that in 1981, we were just coming off several years of price controls and import quotas and a big green energy initiative that involves solar and wind and some other things. About that time, my dad was in the Altamont Pass building windmills. So here we are going around the block 29 years later doing the same thing. Just an observation.
And if I might add to that observation, Representative Beard, I think it's kind of unfortunate that we didn't pay attention to the warnings that we had that long ago. We might be in a different place today. Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just also point out that the problem's gotten worse in that we now spend $1 billion a day on foreign sources of energy, especially in the places that want to do direct harm to us. We're funding both sides of the war on terrorists, as Senator John McCain and I think Anthony Zinni and the CIA have confirmed that. But a quick question, a request for a friendly amendment for Representative Johnson. I'm wondering if you'd be willing to amend the title of Section 1 to include the small town of Schaefer.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not at this time, but we'll take it under consideration.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Is there any actual discussion to the bill? Representative Beard.
Well, just one. I enjoy the repartee with my colleague. I think that a certain president in 1978 actually established an energy department to save us from the evils of foreign oil. Back in those days, we were importing 16%, I think, almost all from the Middle East. In the meantime, we helped our friends in Canada become our biggest importer. The $700 million a day, actually, you're talking about, not a billion. Most of it goes to our friends in Canada and Mexico and Kenya and other places like that. Most of those folks, I think, actually look pretty fondly on us, Mr. Chairman. So $25 billion a year, 16,000 employees, and we're no less energy independent, if there is such a thing, as we were in 1981.
Representative Johnson, would you like to renew your motion?
Yes, I'd like to renew my motion that the matter be passed and moved to the floor.
Any further discussion or any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Bill is passed to the General Register. Members, the major item of business that we have before us today is the Finance Division's supplemental budget. Members have the documents in their folders. They have been available online and at Ms. Smith's desk from as soon as they have become available. I think there has been ample opportunity for input. And we have, frankly, not experienced much input. The target that we were given ultimately turned out to be $49,749,000. The bill provides for $49,770,000, $21,000 in excess of the target. I would like to ask Mr. Soderberg to run through the spreadsheet, and as soon as he returns, we will do that. I don't know what happened to him, but I presume that he will be back momentarily.
Marlboro moment.
I guess in the meantime, if anyone has any questions, either I or Mr. Pomeroy might find ourselves capable of answering, we'd be happy to entertain them. Representative Beard, did you have?
I was just going to ask. We're going to get into this discussion. We're going to get into the discussion shortly, Mr. Chairman. But I'm looking here for the $15 million from the Workman's Compensation Fund, and I know that's going to be that's serious money and serious stuff. Is there someone that can speak about that, or is that what Ron was going to do?
Ron will. Mr. Steinberg will do that. I don't know if there's anyone here that can address that, but Mr. Eloff apparently is willing to give that a shot also.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Chair, if Representative Beard was just asking where that amount is in the bill, it's at the bottom of page 7, beginning on line 7.29.
Okay, here we go. All right.
There we go.
The man of the hour has arrived. Members, the first thing that we need to do is that I need to move House File 1741. And we move that House File 1741 be recommended pass and return to the Committee on Finance. And members, I would then move the let me make sure I have the right number here, the 810-2300 amendment, which is a delete all amendment to House File 1741. So any discussion to that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Mr. Soderberg.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'll just go briefly through the spreadsheet just so you can get kind of an understanding of what the bill contains as it relates to the fiscal items in the spreadsheet. In the bill, just as a matter of a principle throughout the spreadsheet, anything that is a positive on the comparison side, on the right-hand side, the last two columns, means that delete all amendment language is above the governor. Anything in a negative on the appropriation side means that the delete all amendment is below the governor. And so if you just briefly go through the first portion of the spreadsheet, and I think you'll get a sense of what it looks like and what it means. Let's just go through the general fund appropriations and cancellations of the Department of Commerce. On the general fund appropriations side, the first item is a governor's item that was that is included in the bill. The second is a governor's recommendation for the ratification of his on-allotment going forward. That is not included in the bill. Likewise, the operating reduction that the governor recommended is included in the bill. The on-allotment ratification on the market assurance side or market assurance division is not included. The federal licensing system access that the department spoke about just a couple of weeks ago is in the bill. This is a House only item. The next one, the E85 cost sharing grants, there's a reduction of $250,000 in FY10, and that is the entire appropriation for that program in 10. Likewise, the next item under general fund cancellations, the E85 cost share grants, there's a cancellation of 350. So taken together, that's 600,000 on the E85 cost sharing grants. The renewable hydrogen initiative is a 2007 appropriation, and that is being canceled to the general fund of 500,000. So in total, the appropriation side of the department, you can see that the House on the direct appropriations is cutting 250,000 more than the governor, and the out year we've already spoke about, the cancellations total 900,000 or 1,150,000 beyond above the governor's recommendations in cuts. The petrol fund is the governor's recommendation. And the special revenue funds, again, if you see a positive, it's not included in the, a blank means it is included in the bill. A positive means that it's not included in the bill. Moving on to page two, the special revenue cancellations. These are previous cancellations from previous bienniums. These of the amounts remaining in these funds, these are the dollar amounts that are being canceled back to the special revenue fund. And likewise, if you look, you can see that the difference in direct appropriations is the bill includes 60,000 over the governor. In cancellations, it's 230,000 below. So the net effect of the appropriations in the general fund or in the special revenue fund is 171,000. And then it just shows the totals, both directing cancellations, and then by the funds. So in total, if you look at the bottom, total appropriations, it's $1,321,000 more cuts in this bill than what the governor recommended, and the tails is the not ratifying the unallotment. Now, if we go to the general fund revenue side of the ledger, you'll see that, and I'm going to kind of go between the lines under general fund transfers and revenues and non-general fund revenues because the two tie in. The first item is a transfer from the petroleum tank release cleanup fund to the general fund. The delete all amendment would have two transfers of the total would be $2,400,000 more than the governor recommended be transferred. The next one is a special revenue fund. The delete all amendment would have $3,088,000 more than the governor recommended. And if you go down to the bottom there in the lighter numbers, the numbers that are up against the column line there, those encompass what is in that $291,000 in the first year. These are the programs and accounts that encompass that all the way through the sheet. And likewise, in the out year of, or in FY11, the $2,027,000 is made up of the remaining funds and programs that are listed on the sheet there. Going on to the other major items of the bill, there is a transfer from the workers' comp assigned risk plan, a one-time transfer in fiscal year 11 of $15 million from their assets. The next is a governor's item. It's the recovery of the work involved in the federal licensing requirement. The next is a notice filing fee. You may recall the department, this is another governor's item, the department made mention of a 2007 uniform, I think it might have been the commercial code. But anyway, inadvertently there were some filings that were deleted in that bill that they wish to continue, and that is a revenue associated with that. The next one is the securities redeemable registration fee. This fee increase would be $25 million ongoing. Basically, it's a doubling of the current fee, and the final one is the retroactive continuing education, again, in the governor's initiative, and is included in the bill. And with that, Mr. Chairman.
With that, members, we would entertain questions to the bill. Representative Western.
Mr. Chair, to the $25 million fee, can you refresh for the committee and for myself? You said it doubles the fee. Is that the one we raised just a couple of years ago to generate $25 million, and now we're going to generate 50? And is this on the retirement 401k accounts and things like that, or can you just give us a little more insight on that fee and the history of it?
Representative Western, I can tell you that is a fund that was capped, and what occurred a couple of years ago was the removal of the cap. There was no fee increase at the time. This is, however, a fee increase. Mr. Soderberg, can you shed any light on the source of the funds in this?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Westrum, and members, this is oftentimes called the mutual fund, a fee, and what it is that currently under law, it's 1/20th of 1% of the when companies are going to be offering, making securities in the state, they pay 1/20th of 1% of the value of those offerings, and what this would do is make it 1/10th of 1%, and for perspective, 1/20th of 1% is 50 cents per thousand, and this would make it $1 per thousand, just to give you an idea of what the fee is.
point, Mr. Chairman, at this, I don't recall you saying this, but I probably missed it. The special risk transfer, is it $15 million? And what is that account, and can you talk more about that?
Sure.
Mr. Soderbergh.
Mr. Chairman and members, the workers' comp assigned risk plan is a plan that is overseen by the Department of Commerce. It is a plan for employers that cannot, that have been not denied insurance, workers' comp insurance in the private market, and this is so that they can meet state law. This plan is made available so that they can meet state law to have workers' comp on their employees, and that's what the plan is.
Representative Wester.
Mr. Chair, what is the current balance in that account? Are we taking just a small percentage of it, half of it, all of it? And what generates the revenue in that account? I assume assessments or a percentage of payroll on these companies that are participants in it. Is what effects it going to have on what amount they have to pay?
Mr. Stoudemire.
Mr. Chairman, the current assets, and when I say assets, I mean assets over liabilities. Every year there's an audit done, an actuarial audit done, as well as a financial audit done of the fund. And the current assets over liabilities, the surplus, is $50 million. This would drop that to $35 million. This in and of itself would probably not have an effect on premiums, but market forces could make that different.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wester.
Can you expand on that? What do you mean by market forces could make that different? And do we have that? And is there anybody from Commerce here that could testify? Is it for sure if we take this, we aren't going to need the funds there and it wouldn't affect an assessment? Or what's the chances that would raise an assessment on business owners?
Mr. Soderbergh.
Mr. Chairman, I guess by market forces I mean the actuarial, because obviously, as in any insurance plan, the assets have to be there to cover what might be your actuarial exposure for liabilities of the people covered by the plan. So if there is a change in the assumptions of the actuarial, that in and of itself wouldn't do it, but it would, you know, it'd take a pretty drastic change. But I don't want anyone to think that anything is without risk in this world.
Representative Beard.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. That was one of my concerns, too. I knew when I had payroll, workman's compensation premiums were one that were an important part of payroll costs that we added to our employers in this state. Jobs are pretty important. It's part of the deal. And, Mr. Chairman and members, we're in some pretty dire times right now. It's pretty unusual things going on. So I know we're looking for every spare dollar we can. So one of the things I just was looking for some, I don't know if comfort's the word, but at least some understanding that if we took $15 million out of this fund, we weren't going to inadvertently trigger a rate increase on employers who were trying to comply with the number. You know, we're trying to get employees off the independent contractor thing and back on payroll somewhere as true employees, and weren't going to kick them in both shins instead of just one shin in that case. But I do, after we hear from the department, I might want to ask the same question about the petroleum tank fund at some point.
Certainly.
Mr. Chair, members, Manny Munson-Ogala, Deputy Commissioner for the Market Assurance Division at the Department of Commerce. Mr. Soderbergh has done a good job of explaining what the assigned risk plan does. It is the plan of last resort for workers' compensation in our state. It is funded by premium and investment income. It's intended to be self-sustaining. It's intended to be priced at a level higher than the regular marketplace. So that's where it starts from. The amount, the $50 million he's talking about, is based on the difference between what they have currently and what they project as their expected liabilities for claims. The challenge in determining whether or not this $15 million is going to be a material number It's comp takes a long time to resolve. Those claims sit around for some significant portion of time. What $50 million relative to their liabilities is a 6% swing either way. If we make a bad guess on the liabilities and put them into deficit, the commissioner has to require them to assess their members. And the members are the admitted carriers to Minnesota. They would in turn be able to tack on those assessments to their premiums to the rest of the marketplace. So that's our challenge in determining whether or not the $15 million is going to be material. I know the commissioner would say, Commissioner Wilson would say, he doesn't like any raids on any funds, but I think we're past that starting point. I know it makes us nervous as insurance people whenever our cushion is reduced. Will there still be some cushion? As Mr. Soderberg said, there'll be $35 million. Whether that's enough, we'll have to see how the numbers turn out.
Thank you, Mr. Mazzocco. Representative Western.
Mr. Chair, to the Deputy Commissioner, you said that's about $50 million is about a 6% swing. That tells me you've got about how many hundred million does this generate in a year, and what are your liabilities typically? Just so we $50 million seems like a big cushion, but if it's only 6% or a 6% swing is all it takes to wipe this out, that puts it in a different light to me.
Mr. Monson, McDonald.
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrum, in 2008, the assigned risk plan held assets of $728 million and had liabilities of $690 million.
690?
690.
Okay. And, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Westrum.
Can you just give us a flavor? Is there a general type of employer that you're talking about here that often is in this high-risk pool? Or, I mean, is it mining? Is it construction work? Is it ditch digging? Is it dog grooming? What is there a trend, or just what would trigger somebody to get into this pool? And I'm just trying to figure out who would potentially be affected.
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrum. Typically, it's folks who've had bad loss experience. They get into the assigned risk plan. It can be a number of different industries. But if there is a trend, what we've noticed is the standard marketplace has been working hard to depopulate the assigned risk plan. There are carriers that go after this business pretty aggressively and try to figure out a way to provide them a home.
Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think most of my question has been answered. I think I'm in this plan. I have a nanny, and I have a workers' comp program on my nanny, and it's through the assigned risk program, and I have to imagine that's because I'm a one-person employer, and that's why I can't get a competitive rate through a normal. But your insurance agents just refer you over to this plan. It's not like a big deal. But my question was about the fee that would be assessed on the people paying the premium, but it sounds like the fee is not necessarily assessed just on the people paying the premium, it's on the carriers in the state. So the burden for financing the fund is spread out amongst more than just the people who are in the fund.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's correct. Let me back up. If there is an assessment based on the deficit, the assessment goes to the members, the insurers. They in turn can pass that assessment on to other insureds. I'll have to look back at the plan of operations to see if that includes the actual insureds under the plan, but I would suspect that's true.
Representative Gunther, members, we do have a couple of amendments that are before us that we should take up at some point here, but Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Assistant Commissioner, Automobile Theft Prevention Program, they're taking $420,000 a year out of it. Is there any money left in that program after we took some last year and this year?
I'm looking at our
Representative Gunther, I think you're asking the wrong Deputy Commissioner here, but
whoever is able to answer that.
I'm looking to our CFO, Mr. Janke, to see if he knows the number. Just to refresh the recollection of the committee, I believe by statute the state gets $1 million, an automatic sweep from the auto theft recovery fund. I think we'll be down to
Representative Gunther, I believe the figure we have before us here is $1.2 million. Mr. Soderberg.
Mr. Chairman, at the beginning of this fiscal year, $745,000 was balanced forward into the fund. With the receipts, it's estimated that the fund would have available $4.1 million. And as of right now, unobligated is $2.5 million.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And I think that may be the fund. You haven't done the transfer to the general fund yet, so it'd be 1.2.
No further questions at this time. Representative Hackford.
Mr. Chairman, could I move the 2316 amendment?
Certainly, Representative Hackbarth. Motion is made. The amendment is before us. I think it has been distributed. You want to address the amendment, Representative Hackbarth?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's pertinent to the issue we were just discussing a little while ago, the $15 million that we're taking from the assigned risk plan. And my concerns have been addressed here today, and I think we had a pretty good explanation of that. And I know that you have to come up with the money somewhere. I just think that if we take the money from this renewable energy fund and then move forward and take the remainder from the assigned risk plan, might be a better way to go. That's what the amendment does.
Representative Hackbarth, I can only say about that that I believe with respect to the Renewable Development Fund, we tried to follow the governor's recommendations. We made a couple of minor exceptions to that, that I think we're in the tens of thousands of dollars. And my own consideration was that while some of the money that remains in the Renewable Development Fund is not obligated at this time. There's a way in which it is. I mean, there are commitments made to research that people are counting on. I believe a lot of what is funded in that fund is very valuable to advance what we're trying to advance in various areas of concern for this committee. And frankly, I felt comfortable following the governor's recommendations here, just in terms of who's going to be affected by these transfers. I think that the workers' compensation plan is less likely to experience any really detrimental effects than to tap the Renewable Development Fund. And so that was the choice we made.
I understand, Mr. Chairman.
I guess I would oppose the amendment on that basis.
Okay. I understand your concern. My concern is for the fund, for the assigned risk plan fund, and I'm not taking all the money. We're saying leave the obligated money alone. That's okay. Just spend that money. That's already obligated. This is only money that's left over. I mean, we're talking about $13 million. I think there's like $9 million still left after the unobligated money, $8 or $9 million. That's why we didn't put a figure down here, because I don't know the exact amount. But there's a surplus of money there, so that's why I thought we'd do it this way, because I was concerned about the assigned risk plan. And we heard about some of those concerns today.
Further discussion to the amendment. Representative Obermuller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hackbarth, maybe you know, or we may need help on the numbers, but we're some of this, it sounds like this is some of the same funds that we're taking out
with other parts of this bill. So do we know how much, first, would your intent be that we would be taking the unobligated balance, whatever's left over after we already removed the governor's recommendations, or would you, that unobligated balance based on everything, and then we'd also be taking the governor's recommendations on top of that?
Representative Hackworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It would take the remainder of the unobligated money, whatever that is, whether that includes the governor's recommendations or not. It's the remainder of the account, whatever's in the account.
Okay.
The remainder of the fund.
All right, thank you.
And then we would go to the assigned risk plan and take the remainder to help balance the budget and send that to the general fund. So we'd probably end up taking maybe, I don't know, what does that leave? $5 million more from the assigned risk rather than take the whole $15 million. $6 million, whatever it is.
Thank you.
Mr. Soderberg, can you tell us what, do you have the balance in that fund before you?
Mr. Chairman and members, I do not have the balance in the fund before me. I'm sorry I didn't bring that with me. I think, if I recall, and Representative Hackworth may be able to help me on this, I think that we that it looked like 9.3. Was that the number?
Mr. Chairman, yes. That's,
that was the number. We've got two conflicting numbers, yep. One from the department and one from Excel, and the Excel number is higher than the department number. Is that,
Mr. Chairman? Yes, that's correct. And that number was like 9.3. The Office of Energy Security, as of March 2nd, has a number of 8.9. So it's approximately 9 million.
Right.
That's after the unobligated money.
Representative Kayla.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't remember who was testifying yesterday in State Government Finance, but in fact, actually, it may have been last week, Commissioner Ines. Characterize the tax compliance money that that it was part of the governor's budget as being certainly not a first nor the first hundredth choice, I think was how he described it. And so I imagine that the governor's office was looking for every dollar that they could to balance the budget. And I'm wondering if you know any background, given how well the department has communicated with you and our staff, about why they might, the governor's office may have chosen to not take the approach that Representative Hackworth is advocating.
Representative Kalin, I do not. This is not something that we discussed directly with the department at the time, because we had felt that the governor's recommendations were something that seemed appropriate and that we were willing to go along with. I don't know if there's anyone here in the audience that can address that or not. Is there further discussion to the Hackworth Amendment? Representative Westman.
Mr. Chair, maybe Mr. Soderberg could share to the committee and myself what we're taking here is what is typically known as the RDF funds, is that right? And how does that, those funds have been set aside originally for research. How does that help balance the state budget? Can you just explain that for us in the first step here?
Mr. Chairman, members, Representative Westrom, the amendment would basically transfer the money out of the RDF to the general fund. So it would be a revenue to the general fund. And that would offset part of the general fund problem of not having enough money. And so that would be the way that this would help balance the budget. And if I understand the amendment, that would be the first source of funds, and whatever amount of money needed to get to $15 million, the assigned risk plan would be the second source of funds. In both cases, $15 million would be transferred to the general fund. Under Representative Hackforth, it's just a different way of getting to the $15 million. I don't want to speak for Representative Hackforth, but that's my understanding.
Mr. Chairman,
Westrom, just let me ask Representative Hackbarth. My understanding is that if this amendment were to pass, among things that would actually be defunded would be the grant to the to Winona State University for the IREDI project and for the solar certification lab at the University of Minnesota. Is that your understanding?
Well, Mr. Chairman, if that's what it does, I guess so, but I didn't know, is that money been obligated or not? I guess that's the question. According to, Mr. Chairman, according to my chart that I have.
Somewhat uncertain about that, Representative Hackbarth, but, you know, that's kind of the problem with these amendments. I mean, I'm sure you're aware that we attempted to get together with members to discuss this bill for more than a week in advance of this meeting and have had no response. And I think the problem with bringing amendments forward at the last moment, particularly since there has been ample opportunity to do that, is kind of problematic. Right here. Representative Portman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, it seems to me the choice we're making here is between a fund that has a surplus that if the surplus is depleted, there may or may not be an increase down the road for insurers, which may or may not trickle down to ratepayers like me. But if we cut the funds that Representative Hackbarth is talking about in the other program, we know that there are certain activities that won't occur that potentially could be helpful to the state economy in the long term. And I just, I think that the chair is making the better recommendation, because if there's a surplus in that fund, we're taking a chance, but I'd rather take that chance than cut things that we know will improve the economy.
Representative Western.
Mr. Chairman, a couple questions, first of all, but let me back up to your comment earlier. Mr. Chairman, we on the Republican side didn't have a copy of this proposal till last night, so whatever was out there for a week or longer, I wish we would have gotten a copy of this sooner, which maybe goes into the point of what is your plan with this bill?
Well, Representative Westrom, the invitation to the members of your caucus was to participate in putting together the copy of the bill that was not available until last night. There were some adjustments, but basically this is the same bill with a couple of major changes in it that we put together more than a week ago. So the opportunity that I was attempting to offer was to participate in the decisions about what would go into this bill in the first place.
Well, Mr. Chair, that's the first time that's been communicated to me. So if it was communicated to somebody else that way, that's fine. But, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Westrom, we emailed you this invitation. It's in the record.
Well, Mr. Chairman, what was communicated to me was to get together to discuss energy committee issues. There's no way we can react to what's out on the table when we didn't get it till last night. And so that's part of the process.
Representative Westrom, that is a gross misrepresentation of what has occurred.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we've got some questions on the couple of programs. Could Mr. Soderberg or somebody...
Representative Westrom, we have the Hackbarth Amendment before us.
Well, it relates to the
questions related to the
amendment. Well, it relates to the expenditures that are being affected by the Hackbarth Amendment. Mr. Chairman, specifically the CERT teams. In your proposal, we're reducing them some. What is the money that would be left over be needed for, and what would they be doing with that fund, those funds, if this amendment doesn't pass?
I don't believe that I can answer that question, Representative Westrom. I don't think that we have analysis from any of the entities that are funded or defunded as to the complete nature of their activities.
So Mr. Chairman, it probably would make sense. We don't know if the partial reduction, what that's going to go for. We might as well reduce the whole amount under that analysis.
With regards to this, your question was specific to the CERTs. I did talk to the executive director of the CERTs program about the proposed cuts, and she indicated that that was something that they could live with and proceed with their activities. That's about as much as I can tell you.
So, Mr. Chairman, are we going to hear from some of those groups so we can find out if there's another $100,000 they could afford to give up? Or, ultimately, we may have to do away with some expenditures given the red situation we're in. But, or are we not going to be hearing from any of them in this process? When do you estimate to have this bill up, Mr. Chairman? Maybe that's the question.
Representative Westrom, presuming that the bill passes out of this committee today, it will be up in the Finance Committee on Friday as part of the first round of the supplemental budget. I'm not sure what the schedule beyond Friday will be. We have attempted in putting this bill together to determine effects on entities. We have heard from people, as I mentioned. I had a discussion with the CERTS director. We've had discussions with other concerned parties. You know how this gets put together as well as I do. So we'll give the opportunity to anyone present today to testify for or against the bill. Beyond that, it sort of just goes into the process.
That's all for now.
Further discussion to the Hackbarth Amendment? Seeing, Representative Hackbarth. Go ahead.
Could you get us back on track on my amendment, Mr. Chairman? I just have to say again, I'm just concerned about the assigned risk plan and the amount of money that we're taking from that, and I think this is a way to go. The issue that you brought up about Mankato State University, I do point out to you that that is in the obligated money and it is taken care of, so we're not taking money from that.
That does appear to be the case.
Yep. So that's all taken care of. I would recommend a yes vote, and I'd ask for a roll call.
And Representative Hackbarth, I appreciate your concerns. We just have a difference of opinion here. Not an unreasonable proposal. Roll call having been asked for, seeing no further discussion. Representative Obermeier.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. But it was the discussion we had earlier. Now, the question I asked of Mr. Representative Hackbarth, I thought I got the answer, but then the discussion kind of changed it. It appears from your amendment that we would be taking out the $8 or $9 million, whatever that is, that's in the unobligated balance. But under the current language in the bill, some of those reductions are coming out of the actual dollars. So if we take the unobligated balance and then we remove, say, $90,000 from the International Renewable Energy Technology Institute, we're actually going down below into the stuff that's already obligated. So I just wanted to confirm that was the intent, or if we maybe need some adjustment to your language there.
I don't think that's what That's not what's happening, Mr. Chairman. I don't know how you're reading it. I don't know.
Could you use the mic, please, Representative Hacker?
Right. Yeah, I agree.
Mr. Chair, if I may. Okay, well, I'm just looking, like, for example, at, and it, I'm happy to be corrected because I think I support the amendment, though. But the it's 3.13, for example, there, that's saying $90,000 of the first year comes out of that, and it's a reduction to that grant program, but it doesn't say it's coming out of the unexpended balances, for example, like 3.26 does with respect to the Renewable Hydrogen Initiative. So if you remove under under this amendment, we remove all of the unobligated balance, and then we'd still have an obligation under the law to remove an additional $90,000. That's going to be out of the obligated balance, and that's what I'm concerned about.
Mr. Chairman,
choose
the mic, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, Mr. Chairman, we're deleting that language. That's gone, according to my amendment.
I'm tracking now. Thank you.
Seeing no further discussion, a roll call having been requested, the clerk will take the roll. Chair votes no.
Falk?
No.
Western?
Yes.
Anderson?
Yes.
Atkins?
No.
Beard?
Aye.
Bly?
No.
Reinert? Gunther?
Yes.
Hackbarth?
Aye.
Poppy? Portman?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Kalin?
No.
Knuth?
No.
Kulik Jackson?
No.
Magnus?
Aye.
Nornis?
Yes.
Obermueller?
Nope.
Purcell?
No.
Saylor?
No.
Seifert?
Aye.
Welty?
No.
Being 8 ayes and 14 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. There is another amendment, the A1 amendment. I don't know who the author of the A1 amendment is, but if he or she would identify themselves.
Mr. Chairman,
Western, do you?
I'll move the A1 amendment.
Move the A1. That motion is before us. Representative Western, to your amendment.
Mr. Chairman, this wouldn't do as much as Representative Hackbarth. There's two appropriations for the CERT teams and another 400 and some thousand for the Minnesota governor, or the Mid-State, the Governor's Association. I'm just proposing we take those dollars first before we impact the work comp risk pool. And I just urge members' support. I don't think we should take it lightly. When work comp rates go up on business on employers, it affects people. I'm surprised to hear a nanny is sitting in the work comp pool, but for whatever reason, that I guess nannies are jobs too, and. Representative Hortman, maybe you can afford to pay it, but there's a lot of small businesses out there that would be negatively affected, and I'm thinking of my small contractors that periodically I hear from when their work comp rates go up or unemployment insurance rates go up, and whether they're in the regular market or the special risk market, it affects their bottom line and their costs, and I'm thinking of one particularly who I know I could call right now, and they would be gravely concerned if they were ever faced with increased rates, because that's a big issue in their small business. His wife's a teacher, and he's got a few employees and does construction work, and these are significant liabilities to those business owners, and so this would be a way to soften that a little bit, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Soderberg, could I ask you, would you be able to put figures behind the proposals in the amendment?
I will do my best, Mr. Chairman. If I understand the amendment, on page 4, meet line 18.
Mr. Soderberg, could you pull your mic down?
Mr. Chairman, I'll do my best. I'm going to have to get the bill and kind of walk through it with you as to it. On page 4, page 3, starting on line 5, basically what this amendment would do is remove those reductions from the bill. So the search team, if I understand, if I'm wrong, Representative Westrom, please correct me, but as I understand it, both the search team and the reduction in the IREDI grants would be removed all the way through line, I mean 5 through 12. I'm sorry, the search team would be removed. And then on page 4, it would be the remaining balance on line 18 of the amount of money that is in the hydrogen roadmap instead of the $50,000 cancellation, as I understand it. So it would be the unexpended balance entirely would be canceled. And on page 5, and I'm sorry that I'm kind of just going through this myself at this point, on, it would delete line 2, so this would be the unexpended balance that is currently available or for studies and activities associated with the Legislative Greenhouse Gas Accord Advisory Board. The other two amendments on page 5, line 2, they would insert instead, just the entire balance would be gone, as well as on the certs one. And let's see, is that the end of it? Page 5, line 2, that would be inserted. And I think that, is that covered?
Representative Westrom?
Mr. Chairman, I think it does, but the Mr. Soderberg, I'm not sure. You said it would restore the cut. As I understood it, it would take that line item out completely. But let me do a little checking here.
Number 3, it might have been the first one. You talked about the first one I spoke to.
Yeah. Well. The net effect, and I got the net effect. If it's restoring money, I'm not proposing that we try to spend more money. So let me check on that.
Okay. While Representative Westrom is checking his facts, Representative Knuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Looking at line, it's the after page 5, line 1.2. It's the Legislative Greenhouse Gas Accord Advisory Group, and this is basically a more Minnesota-specific study with the Midwestern Governors Association Greenhouse Gas Accord process, which is getting closer to finishing, and we're a year or so behind, but we're getting quite close. The modeling is should be out pretty soon, and my understanding is they've already undertaken a lot of that modeling, and I don't know if this money would even, other than what the agency has identified, $13,000 of up to $450,000 appropriation, if it would actually be more money other than what's already there. And I think underscoring the importance of this, and we're seeing movement in Washington on taking strong action on greenhouse gas reductions, which I think is really important. Just last night on CBS News, there was a lengthy report about China winning the race in renewable energy, and the U.S. not keeping up with what they're doing. And as a federal bill goes forward, this Midwestern process is really, really important to making sure the Midwest perspective, which is frankly different than the coasts and different than the Northeast, it needs to be heard, and this is an important part of that, Minnesota-specific, so our congressional delegation would have that good information as well. And my question is just for the Department of, has this money already been under contract? And, you know, we're a year late, but we're getting there, and I think it's an important thing to see through.
Good afternoon, committee chair. My name is Amy Bissick. I'm the operations supervisor for the Department of Commerce and oversee the grant and contracting division. The contract with MGA is that those funds are fully obligated, and we expect to fully expend all those funds with MGA.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, there's a difference between Representative Westrom's amendment and Representative Hackbar's amendment. You'll notice Representative Westrom's amendment speaks to the unexpended balance of all those funds. So even though monies were obligated, my understanding is these would still be taken under this amendment if they haven't been expended.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Representative Kalin.
Well, my question was for Ms. Bitzik, right? If you could come back forward, I guess the question I have is just understanding that this is a governor's rec, I believe, that we're following, and I know that the department probably had some input. Just what's the actual impact then of if we've already obligated this full expense and we're now going to write a check that's $13,000 smaller? And I'm wondering if this is also the case in other areas.
Chair and Representative Kalin, MGA has, they were notified of the governor's recommendation. And what that would mean is that the department would have to essentially issue an amendment to MGA and to de-encumber, essentially, or de-obligate those funds to make sure that that 13, those funds are there to go back to the general fund. It's a conversation with MGA and how that affects the work and whether or not they can still complete all the work that was assigned to them. I mean, that's a negotiation decision.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Kalin.
You know, I do appreciate that we have to solve this budget deficit, and the overarching framework is not one that I would have chosen, and I've voted otherwise in the past as well. But I just wonder how often we're going to see the state breaking contracts and making, you know, essentially breaking our word with partners who've done good work. And for instance, I think Representative Knuth's comments generally were brought home to me specifically when I heard from one of the facilitators of the MGA process, commercial demonstration of carbon sequestration projects that are happening already in Michigan, a technology that I've been skeptical of, but have been shown that it's likely quite viable, and if it's going to work for Minnesota and we have projects moving forward, I'm going to oppose a Westrom amendment and stick with our 13,000 reduction, but I have concerns that I want to make sure that we're doing this carefully. I think you have done so with your DE amendment, but appreciate the caution that I hope that we're all hearing.
Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to clarify, Representative Westrom has represented that what we're doing with the transfer of the unexpended balance in the fund that you've identified, Mr. Chair, as accomplishing some sort of a rate increase in workers' compensation. And I think the testimony from the Department of Commerce was very clear that there's a surplus in that fund. It's absolutely unclear at this point whether that surplus will be needed, and if it were needed, whether there would be a rate increase that the insurers would pass along to their customers. So I think it is inaccurate, and there's no evidence to support a statement that workers' compensation rates would be increased by the actions that we're taking.
Is there further discussion to the Westrom amendment? Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, first of all, to the special special work comp fund. That language wasn't in this amendment, and so Mr. Eloff is going to work on just getting language that would say this would offset those reductions. So I want to make, I'll note that correction, but I've got a question to the witness. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Western, which witness?
Amy, what's?
I'm coming.
She keep running back to her seat.
Exactly. Oh. She doesn't like that seat. It must be hot or something.
Now I've learned my lesson to sit on the aisle. I'm sorry.
Can you explain the process you talked about to de-encumber? And is that a process already in place, or would that be something you'd have to set up, i.e., has it been done before?
Chair and Representative Westrom, the process just in general is that we notify whoever the party is. We send them an amendment that essentially de-encumbers the funds. We make the modifications to the award. And then the grantee or the contractor, the awardee, is on notice that their award has been reduced by whatever amount it is being reduced by. We have put some of our grantees, we're in the process of notifying all of our grantees about the governor's recommendations. And we have not started that process yet because we're waiting for some of these numbers to kind of firm up a little bit more between the governor's budget recommendations, the House, and the Senate. So we're keeping our grantees and our parties informed as best we can as things move through the process.
So, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Western.
So while they've been encumbered, if it says if they've been encumbered, it doesn't mean they've done the work, but they're planning or anticipating the funds, and in short of the note, the de-encumbered notice, they would complete the work as expected. If they get a de-encumbered notice, it might range from they don't do something, or they scale the project back, or they modify it, or they do it for less. Any of the above, or which is correct or not correct?
Chair and Representative Westrom, that is all of the above are certain options, and that's a conversation that the department has with the grantee or the contractor at the time. We look and see where the project is at, how much money we're looking at de-encumbering. And all those things are taken into consideration. And that's a conversation that we have with each grantee or contractor on an individual basis.
So Mr. Chairman, are you familiar with what this money is going for? Can you explain what this study is that they're going to be rendering us back at some point in the future? What does that entail?
Chair and Representative Western, are you talking specifically about the agreement with the Midwest Governors Association?
Correct.
Or, okay. I'm going to ask Special Assistant to the Commissioner Vince Chavez to come down and help address that. I'm primarily involved in the process of
okay.
the paperwork.
That's fine.
Mr. Chavez, welcome to the committee.
Chair Hilty, Representative. For the record, my name is Vincent Chavez, representing the Minnesota Office of Energy Security. This is a follow-up to the regional study on cap and trade and the effects that it may have on and how to implement the cap and trade system, not only in the region, but this is specifically for Minnesota. And not only the implementation of cap and trade, but the implications of cap and trade to Minnesota.
So,
Representative West,
Mr. Chairman, to the witness, Mr. Chavez, do you so cap and how cap and trade would affect Minnesota positively or negatively? Are they reviewing the federal cap and trades bill that once was on track to pass, or what? Can you explain just a little bit more what we're studying with this $400-some thousand expense?
Mr. Chavez.
Chair Hilty, Representative Westrom, this is to follow up on the Midwest Gas Accord. They're doing the same entity that's researching the implications of the Midwest cap and trade system would also make this a specific study for Minnesota. So it's in line with what's been agreed to by the Midwest Governors Association at this time.
So, Mr. Chairman, just
Representative West,
concluding comments. Mr. Chairman, I would urge members to support this. I would ask for a roll call. But, Mr. Chairman, why we would be spending this seems like an awful lot of money for our state to spend on a study about cap and trade. Where we've got this much red ink, it seems to me there's other places we could use this fund better than what we've got. I don't need an answer for this now, but, Mr. Chairman, I know the proposals that are on the table don't even come close to erasing the deficit that we're currently in. Where the rest of the funds are going to come from, I'm not sure. Or if we resist making these kind of changes, are there some that would rather say we'd raise taxes on the families in Minnesota instead? And I don't know. But it seems like a simple study like this certainly isn't more critical than taking money out of people's wallets or funding education or other things in this state. And so, Mr. Chairman, I think it would make sense that, given these economic times, we should make these easy decisions and stop this funding before the study is complete. And, of course, then the work would have been done. We could stop it now and de-encumber through the process that was explained to us. And this certainly would save a sizable amount of money just for a study. It seems like an awful lot of money that we don't need to study, and cap and trade is dead, according to Congressman Peterson, and in the federal level. And so maybe it's time for our state to step back from this as well.
Well, Representative Western, with regard to hard decisions, I would remind members that the governor's recommendation for this budget division was $2.5 million in cuts. What this bill proposes is $49 million. So I think we have made some hard decisions in this division. We're not all that easy to arrive at, and I have to say that I find myself satisfied with the bill as it is. I regret that we did not have the participation in putting it together that we invited, but it is what it is. And Representative Western, I respectfully oppose your amendment. Representative Knuth, did you wish to be recognized? And members, I would remind you, it's 4:15 now. We do have this room reserved for 6 o'clock this evening, and if we cannot conclude discussion and take a vote on the bill by 4:30, I'm perfectly willing to come back at 6 o'clock. Representative Knuth. Vote. There's no further discussion on the Western Amendment. Roll call having been requested, the clerk will take the roll. Chair votes no.
Falk?
No.
Western?
No. Yes.
Anderson?
Yes.
Atkins?
No.
Beard?
Aye.
Fly?
No.
Yeah, right.
Freinert?
Not on the House floor. So.
Gunther?
Yeah.
Hackbarth? Hoppy? Portman?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Kalen?
Whatever Western said at first. No.
Knuth?
No.
Kulik Jackson?
No.
Magnus?
Aye.
Nornis?
Yes.
Obermuller?
Purcell?
No. Saylor?
No.
Seifert?
Yes.
Welting?
There being 7 ayes and 14 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted.
Mr. Chairman?
No further amendments before us. Is there further discussion to the bill? Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I have a discussion about the ethanol grants. And Mr. Soderberg, I understand here that it's $250,000. The committee's recommendation $250,000 and $350,000 at $600,000. And does that wipe the account out,
Mr. Soderberg?
Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to recall. I think that there is $24,000 left in the account subsequent to that. But I stand corrected if someone has a better number. But I think it's
well, Mr. Chairman. I'm looking at the sheet the Lung Association has passed out to us in the back. I guess I'm not clear if there is any funding left in the program. If in fact we have some contracts out there that aren't fulfilled, I'm relying on Representative Kalin's advice. A deal's a deal. Let's pay the money if we owe it.
Magnus, the figure that I have before me is that Mr. Soderberg is correct. The remainder. Currently in the account is $625,000. However, there's a different figure, which is the remainder plus what is currently in process, which is $845,000 plus. Okay. So apparently.
So we do have money, Mr. Chairman, then to fulfill the contracts we have.
That's correct.
And Mr. Chairman.
And Representative Magnus, just in general, putting this bill together, we tried to be very scrupulous and not.
Yeah. I understand. Mr. Chairman, this is a tough job going through this. So we went through this in 2003, Mr. Chairman,
yes.
When I first was elected. So I know exactly how this all works and the help you get from everyone else. But, Mr. Chairman, I guess I am a bit concerned about this program, and I wanted to make sure that we did not have the outstanding contracts out there that are filled.
Yeah.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm not certain how this program works if we have a participation, if we're leveraging funds. I know they used to do this with the American Lung Association. Maybe they could come down and testify, unless you know, Mr. Chairman, if there's funds. For example, a pump costs $15,000 and somebody is leveraging funds from other organizations if we put funds in. And I don't know that, Mr. Chairman, right now. They used to do that, and that's a question I have as we look through this. And I'm trying to figure that out.
I guess we do have someone coming forward.
Yeah.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Kelly Marzak. I'm with the American Lung Association of Minnesota. We administer the grant fundings for the E85 biodiesel and blender pumps here in Minnesota. As to your question, the grant funds work. They allow a retailer to receive up to $15,000, but a maximum of 75% of the project cost. So in order to get a full $15,000, a retailer needs to have a project cost of $20,000 and provide a minimum of $5,000.
Thank you. That's
Representative Magnus.
That helped with my questions, Mr. Chairman.
Further questions for Ms. Marzak?
And Mr. Chairman, I don't know whether I don't know where the Senate is sitting in this. And again, I want to reiterate, I know how tough it is putting this stuff together in these challenging times. I don't know where the Senate is, and Mr. Chairman, you've been in these dances before too, and we need to think also where the Senate is going to come in at and how you're going to propose to negotiate this with him and the conference committee and all this sorts out. So that was, it's the purpose of some of my questions that I've asked, Mr. Chairman, is try to figure out where we're at.
Agnes, with respect to this particular account, I believe the Senate actually zeroed it out.
Yeah.
Further discussion to the bill? Representative Beard.
Mr. Chair, either to you or Mr. Soderberg, I just want the committee to understand before we vote on the about the petroleum tank release fund. Could someone describe briefly, just refresh our memories on how much is in that fund, what the blink-on number is, because I know that's a blink-on, blink-off tax.
Yes.
And what agency is responsible for expending the funds, what they might have in the pipeline that they need to accomplish their work program for the next year. Are we leaving them enough to do that? That's my bottom line concern.
Mr. Soderberg.
Mr. Chairman, members, Representative Beard, you're right. It is a blink-on, blink-off program. As I understand it, I had a conversation with the department, and I don't see the CFO. It's about ready to blink on right now under current law, okay, without any changes. That will go on for 4 months, and then whatever the amount is in the pot, and then aside from the petroleum tank release cleanup program or what we over at the Department of Commerce, there is DEED, which receives some money for brownfield cleanups, for petroleum related brownfield, and of course there's PCA that does a lot of the remediation to make sure the remediation work is done in a manner and does some of the assessments to make sure before and after assessments of the work done to make sure that the state gets its money's worth.
Representative Beard.
Then, Mr. Chair, are you comfortable that the work program that's been laid out by these agencies over the next probably 18 months or so is be left enough in the account to accomplish that, or if it blinks on, we'll be okay with that then?
That was, Representative Beard, certainly our goal and my understanding.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Further discussion to the bill? Seeing none. Representative Western.
Mr. Chairman, I had similar questions on the TAM and the TAP funds and how much we're rating from those accounts, but I'll let that go for now. I know we're about ready to take a vote. Mr. Chair, I think maybe there are some different ways that we could slice this pie up instead. We got a lot tougher decisions to be made, and if we aren't going to take things like a study on global warming or cap and trade, we got a lot of big problems ahead of us, because that seems like easy money that we should just take off the books and stop those kind of expenditures. But Mr. Chair, I'll just end on I guess a few questions. I'm wondering how the process is going to work from here on out. Do we know if the Senate have you had discussions? So we're quite closely in line with the Senate on their budget reductions, and this is just round one. What are we going to do to get all the way there? And I just hope we don't rush this through such that we find ourselves with a dilemma of just raising taxes in the end of the day, and that'd be my concern of not spending more time on this bill. But, Mr. Chair, I'll just request a roll call.
Roll call having been requested, Representative Western, before I ask the clerk to take the roll, I would remind you, I certainly agree that we have a very difficult road ahead. But please keep in mind that I believe our entire general fund budget in this division is $58 million, and we are giving $49 million to the solution to the problem. I think that further solutions probably lie elsewhere. This cow just isn't going to get much more milk.
Mr. Chairman, just a real brief response, and I would agree with you. It probably is more the underlying what is the direction of your leadership, and when are they going to put the whole picture together? Because right now we've just got part of the picture, and it kind of gets dropped on us with short notice. So I understand that can happen, but you know, just last Friday, late Thursday, we became aware of deadlines, and so we're just, I'm just concerned that this whole process is not going to seek the reforms or the reductions in areas we could reduce. I think the cow could give another $400,000 of milk here, and maybe put cap and trade a little more in the rear view mirror than spending money on studying it. So I've said enough, Mr. Chairman. I'm ready to vote.
Clerk will take the roll.
Hilty?
Aye.
Falk?
Aye.
Western?
No.
Anderson?
No.
Adkins?
Aye.
Beard?
Nay.
Bly?
Aye.
Reinert?
Aye.
Gunther?
Nay.
Hackbarth? Poppy? Portman?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Kalin?
Aye.
Canoes?
Aye.
Kulik Jackson?
Aye.
Magnus?
No.
Nornis?
No.
Obermueller?
Aye.
Purcell?
Aye.
Saylor?
Aye.
Seifert?
No.
Welty?
Aye.
Okay, 14 ayes and 7 nays. House File 1741 as amended is passed and referred to the Committee on Finance. The committee is adjourned.